Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have something special in store for you today. We have three fantastic stories that all tie to one of my favorite college football teams, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. What legacy and prominence that has, you know, the Fighting Irish football fans have. You know, we've talked a lot about them lately. We've made some new friends and got some great information. And we're going to talk about three different eras of Notre Dame football history and three different legends that all sort of connect together to make the Fighting Irish so special. So the first one is kind of an interesting one that we're going to go back in time over 100 years to talk about this legendary player that possibly you've never heard of. As Newt Rockne looked at his roster in the 1925 season, after losing the Four Horsemen backfield and the Seven Mules, he looked to find some more standouts. And one of those guys was a man named John Philip Smith. Clipper is what they called him, who was born on December 12, 1904 in Hartford, Connecticut, often referred to as the Little Clipper, to differentiate him from Maurice J. Clipper Smith, another contemporary Notre Dame alumnus and football coach. Now, he was just 5'9", weighed a mere 164 pounds, but Smith was exceptionally small for a lineman, even by the 1920s standard. But entering into the varsity squad in 1925, Smith was a foundational piece for Coach Newt Rockne. He was facing that monumental task of replacing the Seven Mules and the Four Horsemen to graduation. Now, serving as a quick and powerful and technically precise guard, Smith anchored the Fighting Irish line from 1925 through 1927 season, driving the team to a combined 23-4-2 record during his varsity career. Now, he earned his famous nickname because he operated in the trenches with remarkable smoothness and agility, just like a 19th century clipper ship. Now, in 1927, Smith was named team captain by Rockne and earned consensus All-American honors, outplaying the opposing lineman who frequently outweighed him by 40 to 50 pounds. Now, it was immediately after following his graduation that Rockne hired him as Notre Dame's line coach for the 1928 season. Smith later served as a collegiate head coach at North Carolina State from 31 to 33 and at Duquesne University 1936 to 38. For his fierce undersized tenacity and impact on the game, John Clipper Smith was posthumously inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame as a player in 1975. Now, that's a player that maybe wasn't that familiar to most of us, but this next gentleman made a name for himself for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish of the 1980s, and his story goes on into the NFL. When you want to talk about truly amazing football stories and one that's associated with Notre Dame, well, you got to talk about the walk-on who earned some really promise and some really great legacy as a Notre Dame kicker and as an NFL player. John Carney arrived at South Bend in the fall of 1983 as a preferred walk-on. It didn't take long for him to prove his worth. After just one semester, he earned a full athletic scholarship and became a primary kicker for the Fighting Irish from 1984 to 1986. Now, by the time he graduated, Carney was Notre Dame's all-time leader in field goals, successfully converting 51 of 69 attempts for a 73.9% average. He finished his collegiate career ranked second in the school's all-time scoring list with 223 total points. Now, his stellar performance in South Bend earned him a spot on a Sports Illustrated all-time Notre Dame team. And after going undrafted in 1987, Carney launched a legendary 23-year NFL career. He is one of only three players in NFL history, alongside George Blanda and Morton Anderson, to play in four different decades, spanning from the 1980s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. He was a Super Bowl 44 champion with the New Orleans Saints and a two-time Pro Bowler. Carney retired with 2,062 career points in the league, cementing his place as the fifth leading scorer in NFL history. Now, every great Notre Dame legend that has that moment, and one game etched forever in the lore as the greatest rivalry in college football. For John Carney, that moment came on November 29th, 1986 at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. It was Lou Holtz's first year at the helm of the Fighting Irish, and that season had been a grueling character-building campaign. Notre Dame had entered into the regular season finale against the formidable USC Trojans teams, desperate to finish the year on a high note. For three quarters, things looked bleak. The Trojans jumped out to a commanding 37-20 lead in the fourth quarter. It felt like another frustrating what-if in a transition year. But Lou Holtz's squad refused to pack it in, much like their coach. They were powered by a furious, desperate rally. The Irish offense marched up and down the field, scoring 17 unanswered points. With only seconds remaining on the clock, the Irish found themselves down 37-35, staring at the USC 2-yard line. It all came down to one final play, a 19-yard field goal attempt by Carney. The pressure inside the Coliseum was suffocating. For a kicker, a 19-yarder was supposed to be a chip shot. But the weight of the Notre Dame-USC rivalry, the screaming capacity crowd, and the finality of the clock made that crossbar look miles away. Make the pressure even worse, it was to be the final absolute kick of John Carney's collegiate career. The snap was true, the hold was clean, and Carney swung his leg with the fluid soccer-style precision he had perfected since his high school days in Florida, and the ball sailed dead center through the uprights as time expired. Notre Dame 38, USC 37, the Irish legacy continues, and the luck of the Irish goes on a kicker's foot named John Carney. The Irish bench erupted, storming the field to mob their kicker. It was a legendary comeback that not only gave Holtz a signature foundation to win and build his future in the 1988 National Championship program upon, but it also served as the perfect cinematic bookend to John Carney's remarkable journey from the unheralded walk-on to the South Bend icon. What a way to earn and a birth into the NFL and to finish your college career, you know, beating a rival in such a big game and having that as your last play of the game to make a big comeback win, a big signature win for Lou Holtz in his early career. But we have another coach that maybe is a little bit even more famous at Notre Dame than Lou Holtz. And we have a story about Newt Rockne before he was a coach in Notre Dame. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Mention the name Newt Rockne and your mind immediately travels to South Bend, Indiana. You think of the Fighting Irish, three national championships, and the iconic "Win One for the Gipper" speech. Now, he is without question the holy grail of college football history. But what if I told you that before Rockne built his empire at Notre Dame, he was a mercenary for hire on the bloody, mud-soaked fields of early professional football. Long before the NFL was even a concept, the epic center of football wasn't the college campuses, it was the Ohio League. Towns like Canton, Akron, and Maslin treated football like warfare, and the teams were filled with rugged men who played for cold, hard cash. Fresh off graduating from Notre Dame in 1914, Rockne needed money, so he signed up to play end and halfback for quarterback George Peggy Perrott and the Akron Indians. Rockne was short, balding, and didn't look like much, but he possessed a secret weapon, a weapon that he and his college teammate, Gus DeRay, had spent summers perfecting, the forward pass. In 1915, Rockne took his talents to the legendary Maslin Tigers, joining forces with DeRay once again. In an era where pro football was strictly 3 yards in a cloud of dust, Rockne and DeRay revolutionized the pro game. They unleashed the lethal aerial assault that caught the Ohio League completely off guard, leading the Tigers to a championship that very same year in a two-loss season. But Rockne just wasn't catching passes in Maslin. He was helping drop the plays. He was quietly cutting his teeth as a professional coach, learning how to manage egos and build winning cultures long before he took over the varsity squad at Notre Dame. By 1918, Rockne was named the head coach at Notre Dame, but his ties to the pro game didn't just vanish. In 1920, a new league was born, the American Professional Football Association, which we now know today as the NFL. Now, right there, in a chaotic inaugural season, was a team called the Chicago Tigers. History records show that while Rockne was actively coaching Notre Dame to an undefeated season in 1920, he was simultaneously moonlighting in the pro ranks under various capacities, advising, and working with the professional franchises. In those Wild West days of football, the lines between college amateurism and pro sports weren't just blurred, they were practically non-existent. Even the legendary Green Bay Packers founder, Curly Lambeau, was one of Rockne's student and players at Notre Dame. Rockne's DNA was baked directly into the foundation of the modern NFL. So the next time you watch a Sunday afternoon game defined by the high-flying passing offenses, remember, it didn't just start in modern stadiums. It started in the 1910s with a young, hustle-minded immigrant from Norway catching passes for the Ohio factory teams. Newt Rockne wasn't just a college legend. He was a professional pioneer. Well, there you have it. Three amazing Notre Dame Fighting Irish legends, all wrapped up in a bow with some interesting stories, great legacy, and hope that filled your football brain with some great stuff today. You know, we have some other activities besides these podcasts and besides our YouTube channel. We have all the excellent posts that we have on pigskindispatch.com. We also have a game section. We have four games coming at you to entertain you with gridiron expertise. It's our Gridiron Games Arcade, and I think you're going to enjoy it. It gives you some trivia, play a little paper football digitally, and it has some memory games and a lot more. So check that out. Along with our timeline that we are building, it's still under construction. We have a lot of dates in there, days of the year timeline and a yearly timeline, which by the end of the year we're going to have totally complete for your reading and look up and research pleasure. There's nothing else out there like it. American football timeline, American football games, posts, articles, and more. PigskinDispatch.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back later this week with some more great football history. So thank you and have a great Gridiron Day.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.